Coming up on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast, we talk to Mike Rupp from the NHL Network, a Stanley Cup champion himself, all about the Stanley Cup playoffs and what's gone on here in the first few days of the tournament. Sean and I hit on a lot of different topics, changes around the league, including Lou Lamoriello out with the New York Islanders. All of that and more coming up on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast.
NHL At The Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast. It's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. We have Sean joining us from lovely, sunny, and early in the morning, Las Vegas, where he saw the Minnesota Wild even the series 1-1, 5-2 win. Sean, what's going on?
Just surviving, baby. There's no place like Vegas early in the morning. It's like the Kris Kristofferson and Johnny Cash song, right? Sunday morning coming down, you know, you're just like, wow. But at night and last night with the Vegas Golden Knights and the Minnesota Wilds, just magical. You know, Matt Boldy's had a huge part in the series. He scored Minnesota's first three goals, and he's like, I love it here. I love playing here. I love shutting this crowd up. He's like, but this is one of the greatest atmospheres in hockey. And the Vegas Golden Knights have done this in 8 years. We keep forgetting that.
It's astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing, especially, and as comparison shouldn't be, but, you know, we'll get to all of it, but you see the changes being made in Seattle and, you know, in 3 out of 4 years, they haven't made the playoffs. We'll get to that. And listen, we'll get a little bit more here, Sean, with the Vegas-Minnesota series and all the series. We have Mike Rupp from the NHL Network, former NHL player, Stanley Cup champion. Will be joining us here shortly. We went all around the playoffs with Rupper. Great stuff. Got to listen to that. But we've had moments, man. First week of the playoffs, we're not even through a full week yet, and we've had some really magical moments, which you would expect because it's the best time of the year. It's the best tournament in going, the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? And Alex Ovechkin, Sean, he gets his first ever playoff overtime goal. He's the all-time leading scorer in NHL history. Had never scored in playoff overtime goal. That changed. Remarkable about that, too, by the way, is on the broadcast, I don't know if you heard it, on ESPN, Sean McDonough and Ray Ferraro were just talking. And Sean McDonough had just brought this up like 10 seconds before Ovechkin scored. Like, he's never got one before. This could be his moment. And bang, he gets one. It was amazing, actually, how it happened. So you have that moment. You got Max Domi getting an overtime goal in Toronto, the build, you know, where his dad used to play with his dad in the building. Matthew Tkachuk coming back into the lineup. Potts 2. We've had some really good stuff here so far in the first, I don't count days anymore, Sean. So however many days we've had of the playoffs.
Yeah, and then you had a quasi overtime goal by Phil Deneau in LA in one of the craziest playoff games I can remember for a long time. I mean, that's just, and it was so out of character, you know, and when you think about overtime goals, right, like Colin Blackwood scores a goal, Ovi and Colin Blackwell never used in the same sentence. You'd never compare them in any way. And that's not a slight on Colin. I think he'd be the first one to tell you, like, oh, I'm not in that guy's league. But they're in the same league. And I thought, you know, on that same note, because when you talk about overtime goals, right, it's who's going to step up, who's going to be the hero, and it's usually not the superstar. Like on the panel afterwards, PK has a penalty, has an overtime goal. PK Subban,
yeah.
Marc Messier doesn't, and so they were giving the gears to Marc Messier, right? And at the end, Marc always wins. He's like,
yeah,
we were never behind.
I never had to go to overtime.
never lost, so I didn't have to go to overtime. But It's crazy. The people who haven't scored. Mario Lemieux never scored an overtime goal. Gordie Howe never scored an overtime goal. Like, it's almost reserved as a reward for people that do the hard work, right? Like, yep. Sometimes the superstar score, but a lot of times it's somebody that's so, I don't want to say nondescript, but not as brightly in the spotlight, and that's their one shining moment, to use a sports phrase from a different sport.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 100% right. It's typically not the superstar, but, you know, when Ovechkin scored, it was like, it's just, actually was just like, what can't he do right now? You know, like when he gets the goal, all right, That's coming. And he had a great game too. Game one against Montreal. What's interesting to me, Sean, is, you know, as we're seeing these playoffs now start to play out a little bit. You got two games in that Toronto series, Toronto-Ottawa. You got a game in, as we record this on Wednesday, of Montreal and Washington. And you see the experience versus the inexperience showing up a little bit, right? So Montreal showed resiliency. Does that carry on for them to help them in this series? They lost the game, but they showed resiliency. They were down 2-0. And I think that they took over game one, and I think that Washington sort of stopped playing with any urgency at a 2-0 lead, which is a lesson for them. Toronto, you know, even though it's an overtime goal in game two, Ottawa's right there. They score late. You just, like, you're seeing things from Ottawa. You're like, okay, that shows they haven't played in the playoffs. We'll hit on a little bit of this with Rupper as well. But are you seeing that as well, that these teams like Ottawa and Montreal, like, they're figuring out, and you got to figure it out quick, it's another level?
I think so. I think that's a part of it. But I want to go back to the Washington series for a minute. And I don't think they took their foot off the gas. I think that's who they are. And I think that's who they've been for a long time.
Like Washington, you mean?
Yeah. They didn't finish the regular season well at all. They kind of limped in. You know, they didn't put their skate down.
Yeah.
And, you know, put an end to it and make Montreal believe that they were out of it. And Montreal came all the way back. And you know, if I'm Martin St. Louis, I'm telling these young kids in Montreal that what you saw in game one is who the Capitals are. And they're gettable, especially now, right? The injuries that they have, and you know, Protas isn't in the lineup, all of that. Like, I see them as extremely gettable. And as a matter of fact, I picked Montreal to win.
I mean, they're certainly gettable. They're certainly beatable. There's no question about that. You do wonder, right? Like, and again, how this could be a long series. We don't know yet. Okay, a lot will be determined. Really, frankly, I think a lot gets determined by what happens in game two, which will be this evening in Washington before the series turns to Montreal, where I am headed, actually. I have not been out on the road yet for the playoffs as you have. I've been cleaning up aisle Madison Square Garden for a little bit, clean up on aisle MSG and been doing that. But I'll get to Montreal. The building's going to be absolutely crazy at the Bell Center. Will be even nuttier if it's a 1-1 series, Sean. If it's a 2-0 series, it's going to be nuts. But there's going to be a little bit of that, man, missed opportunity, right? And that's a missed opportunity in game one. If you believe, and you're the Montreal Canadiens, that this team is gettable, and we showed resiliency, and we came back, and we had this game tied, and we get to overtime, and we lose, missed opportunity. Because that's when they could be kicking themselves on, and that's how it happens in the playoffs. They got to have a short memory, get over it fast, but take some lessons. It could be one of those situations though, where they look back on it and go, that was the game. That could change the series. And it's game one.
Well, there's moments in every game, I think, that change things, right? And I think Patrick Laine is going to spend a lot of time, or has probably spent a lot of time, thinking about that overtime goal, right? And what he could have done, what all of them could have done. You got to tie up a faceoff, right? The thing about the playoffs and what makes it so hard is it's 100% all the time. In the regular season, you can coast. You know, you could shut your brain off when it gets overloaded and just be like, I just got to go out and survive. I survive this shift, survive this game because I don't feel it. You know, it's back-to-back nights or whatever. Or we're playing a team that I don't really get up for and just survive. And it doesn't matter what happens. You can't do that in the playoffs. And it's so hard and it's so demanding. It is literally that momentary lapse of discipline, of concentration, of execution that's the difference between winning and losing.
It's Evan Bouchard throwing the puck right to the middle, right into the slot. That ends up in the back of your net. It's Drake Batherson not taking the body on Max Domi. He gets the middle of the ice, scores an overtime goal. It's Laine not taking the body. You know, Ovechkin scores an overtime goal. You're 100% right. Absolutely. Listen, we're going to have Mike Rupp on here in just a few moments, going through just about every series. One that we actually need to hit on a little bit, we didn't with Rupp as you, when you listen to the interview, is New Jersey and Carolina. And Sean, I almost feel bad for the Devils. You know, like you play the team that you can, you play the lineup you can play in the playoffs. That's the way it goes. You see it, seen it already. Guys are getting banged up, but they didn't have Jack Hughes. They didn't have Jonas Siegenthaler, and now they didn't have Brendan Dillon. And they lose Dillon, and they lose Luke Hughes in game one. They get run out of the building for 40 minutes in game one, maybe even 60, but certainly 40. They were better in game two. I thought Markstrom was good, but it just looks like a team that can't score. And you never want to predict a sweep. They're going back to Prudential Center in New Jersey right now for game three. And we've seen the Devils, a version of this Devils team a couple of years ago, get down 2-0 in a series against the New York Rangers and come back and win it in seven. This just looks different to me. I think Carolina, as expected, is a step ahead of the Devils. But now you factor in all the injuries that they're dealing with. Sean, I mean, do you see any hope for New Jersey?
The only hope I see is they were a Timo Meier trigger pull away from overtime, right? And Freddie Anderson's been good, but his playoff track record is not the best. Carolina can't score.
They don't have to.
They're going to have to at some point.
Not in this series.
They're not scoring 5-on-5 in this series. So, you know, I look at all that. And then the other thing I look at, and Mike Rupp's going to talk about this a little bit, right, that there's guys that pull you into a series and you look at them and you're like, oh, I got to do this. Brett Pesce played a playoff game in game two that was ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. They were playing two AHL defensemen because of the injuries that they had. Pesce and Hamilton played together. They hadn't done that really since they were both in Carolina. And he was an animal. He'd doing everything offensively, defensively, throwing his body in front of shots, checking people. Like, as you watch the game go on, you're just like, oh my God, what is that guy going to do? Like, when this game's over, like, does he just go in a dark room in a cold tub and sleep there? Because the price that he paid, and it ended up being a losing effort. But if I'm on that team and I'm a guy that was only given 80, I don't know how you look and say, I got something left. Like, I got to join that guy. I'm embarrassed if I don't.
You're right. And it's certainly not their decor, even though they lost Luke Hughes and Brendan Dillon. I mean, Pesce, you're right. An incredible game. Plays over 23 minutes, 6 block shots in that game. Listen, Brian Dumoulin played almost 24 minutes. That's the ice time Dumoulin was getting when he played for Pittsburgh, and he was Chris Letang's defense partner. Not now. Throws 5 hits, blocks a shot. You know, Dougie Hamilton, he's played 24 minutes. He's got a bunch of shot attempts. He's involved in the offense. It's not their D. Even though they lost Brendan Dillon and Luke Hughes, they need to find a way to generate some puck possession. They need to find a way to generate scoring chances that, you know, are sustained, multiple rebound opportunities, the dirty stuff, right? All those things. But Carolina's giving you very little. You've got to make do with the very little that Carolina gives you. And the Devils haven't done that. And frankly, that's why they're down 2-0 in this series. It's not the injuries on the back end.
No, but I don't think they help. But
they don't help, but they're tough guys.
Need to come to the fore, right? Like, I look at the series I'm covering, right? I'm out here in Vegas, as you mentioned, and the Wild are in this series because their top guys have been phenomenal. And Matt Boldy has 3 goals already. He scored both goals in a 4-2 loss in game one. That was closer. There was an empty net goal with 1/10 of a second left that either made or lost people a lot of money.
I heard about that, yes.
And it was all the talk here in Vegas.
Wrong place for that to happen.
But he's been phenomenal. Kirill Kaprizov scored 2 last night, and they won 5-2.
He's so good.
He scored an empty net goal. It was literally 195 feet. But the best things he's done in the series is he's made two incredible passes, right? In game one, he makes a cross-ice pass to Matt Boldy that basically touches his stick and goes in. And then in game two, he makes this crazy headman pass to Boldy for a goal. Matt Boldy said it's the greatest pass he's ever received. And he happened to be at the podium at the time with Marcus Foligno. And Marcus Foligno was taken aback. And he wanted to cancel the press conference because he's like, hey, dude, I set up your first goal. That was the greatest pass ever. But in all honesty, like Kaprizov, he's starting to feel it again. He was injured for a long time. And they've put a really good Vegas team on their heels. Even in the game one win, Minnesota's top line won. Vegas won that game on their depth. You know, Brett Howden had two goals. He's a fourth-line guy, you know. And so even when Vegas was quasi-dominating, they couldn't handle Minnesota's top line. And Carolina has been able to handle New Jersey's top line.
Yeah. Well, New Jersey's top line is missing its biggest piece. You know, yeah. I mean, let's be fair. And Kaprizov makes such a difference for the Wild here. Before we get to Rupper, I just want to say this one thing. Like, they are a different offense. I think in the regular season, they scored more than half a goal. They had more than half a goal a game more per game with Kaprizov in the lineup versus when he was out. I think it was something like just a shade over three with him in the lineup per game, which you want more, but you can survive if you get good goaltending and defense. And it was under 2.5 without him in the 43 games, whatever it is, that he missed during the regular season. They scored under 2.5. When he played, they scored over 3. That's the difference Kirill Kaprizov makes.
Well, Eriksson Ek was out too. That's two pieces.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it all, during that time, it all fell on Matt Boldy. And he came back, like he's been good all year. And he came back from the Four Nations and you know, Billy Guerin was the GM of that team, and John Hines was part of the coaching staff. And John Hines was like, I don't know if he got any better as a player, but he became so much more confident as a player, right? And then Marcus Foligno said, when Matt Boldy plays big boy hockey, he's a monster. And you look at him and you're like, that kid's not a monster. Like, he's still a young kid. He still needs to put on some muscle and everything else. But he is. And he doesn't get near the credit he should. He's a point-a-game guy. You know, he plays the game every way you want to play it. I've been so impressed with him. I was impressed with him at the Four Nations. I thought he was one of the Americans' best players. But what he's done against a smothering Vegas team, he's given them fits. And Bruce Cassidy's like, I need to figure out what to do with these guys. I have 4 good lines, and I have 6 good D. I think Vegas is the deepest team in the tournament, and they can't figure out a way to shut down this line. Even without the goals, Minnesota's owned the game when that line's on the ice.
Vegas has to start better, too. They have to start better. And that, I mean, you've seen it firsthand, right? I mean, Cassidy talked about this, too. Like, they can't wait into a game and then get better as it goes on. You want to get better as it goes on, but you got to start hotter than they have.
Well, they started hot in game two. They had the first 5 or 6 shots, and Gustafsson had to make a couple of huge saves. And then Boldy scores that goal. And then Foligno scores with the assist from Hartman, right? And you know, Ryan Hartman in game one was a punching bag. He got hit at the blue line blind, and I think it was just a mistake, like where he had his head down and the defenseman was trying to move into space, but it was a crushing hit in open ice with the puck nowhere around. He got up and he kind of wandered his way back to the bench, and then he gets cross-checked in a scrum, no penalty. He gets hit again. He's bloodied. And not once did he retaliate. Not once did he open his mouth to the referees, and John Hines made a point after game one to show that to the Wild, to other players, and say, this is what playoff hockey is. Here's a guy that is just, he's a pinata, and he's taking it. and he's coming back for more. And I'm going to give him more. I'm going to move him up to the third line. He was playing fourth line center, so they flipped him and Rossi. And his fingerprints were all over game two. And it was an example to the whole team. Like, this is what you do in the playoffs. You know, and everybody kept on asking Hartman, you know, oh, isn't it great that you were so disciplined and you earned Hines' trust? He's like, it's the playoffs. It's the playoffs. You don't have a choice. What are you going to do? Are you going to be selfish and retaliate and put your team at a disadvantage? No, you're going to eat it. And you're going to make them pay for what they did. Like, I think about the Kaprizov goal at the end of the game. Right before that, there was a scrum in front of the net. And I think it was Haig, but I'm not 100% sure. But somebody just, in the middle of that scrum, uppercutted Kaprizov. Buckled him. And then stood there and laughed at him as he tried to get himself up off the ice, right? And that's what happens in NHL playoffs. It's mean. And then what does Kaprizov do? He didn't say a word. He throws a 195 Hail Mary, 195 foot Hail Mary, and sticks the final dagger in him. Because Vegas was coming, and they were coming hard. And that's what you do in the playoffs. You take it, and you give it back.
Well, I mean, we got a guy who's going to join us here in a second, right? Who knows a lot about playoff hockey, Sean?
Mike Rupp knows about playoff hockey. He knows about getting in people's kitchens. He knows about stepping into the big moment, Stanley Cup winning goal, Stanley Cup clinching goal. And he's almost as good as an announcer as he was a player. But before we get to this amazing interview, here's a word from Skip.
Brie food, beauty. Skip 60 to score is here. Get even more wins during the Stanley Cup playoffs. How to play, you ask? Place a game day order to play. Pick your team and get your minute. If either team scores during that time, you score a $25 Skip voucher. Order and play 60 to score in the Skip app to take your shot. Now until May 19th. Get her one. Rupper, thanks so much for joining us. Playoffs are underway. What's caught your eye?
Oh, man. We've had some good ones already.
Yeah.
I don't know if I wasn't anticipating. We usually do, but I feel like we had a couple crazy nights. I think two nights ago was a crazy night with the LA Kings, Edmonton Oilers. I mean, the way that Dallas Stars team came back, I mean, probably one of the best games of the night for me. And it wasn't as exciting score-wise was the physicality of the Jets-Blues game. Obviously the Ovechkin show a little bit there in DC. So that was probably the best night so far, but I mean, it's just, we've got energy, we've got comebacks and all those things that I think make this time of year just so unique in the NHL.
Well, look, I think we need to start with that game in LA, right? People had the Oilers written off when they fell behind. I think it was 4-0.
Yeah.
And then it was 5-1, and then they come all the way back. Was that cosmetic, do you think, or is there something there for the Oilers?
What are you suggesting is cosmetic? The first 40 minutes,
that the first 40 minutes were real.
Oh yeah.
And then
that was a bit of a cover up.
Yeah,
David Show kind of covered things. I got what you're saying. I think it's that. But I mean, quite frankly, with the injuries they have, I think it's probably going to have to be that. I mean, they need Chris Knobloch talk about it. They need depth scoring. I mean, that's been the story of this team for quite some time. You know, I always find with this team, really, I think even dating back since Connor came in to the league, Edmonton was always this team. And if this makes any sense to anybody, I hope it does, because it makes sense in my head, which is always kind of a dangerous place sometimes. When you got Leon and Connor, and we know that this is more than that, and they proved that last year, it's more than that, but let's be honest, like that's a huge portion of their hockey club and their success. When they get like one other thing going for them, that's enough. Like that is enough for them to win. And what I mean by that is if you get good goaltending, that's enough. If the goaltending is average and you get good penalty killing, that's enough. A hot power play, that's enough. Like they don't need depth scoring, that's enough. Like, they don't need all things to be perfect. They just need, they've got so much in Connor and Leon. They just need something else going. And with the injuries they have right now, like, they might need more than that. And I think you saw that, whether it was a wake up call, maybe in some regards to the LA Kings. I mean, they know this team. They've lost to them the last number of years. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, Sean, it's probably going to have to look like that. I mean, it's probably going to have to be the Connor show and the Leon show for this team to get by. And when we thought that there couldn't be any more pressure on this duo, I think this year there is. And yeah, I mean, it was an awesome game. It's just I wonder if you're gonna have to see 4-point nights all the time for this team to get any wins in the playoffs.
So call me crazy, if you know, you wouldn't be the first, but I look at this as a missed opportunity for the Oilers. Yeah. And I know they were down 4-0 and they were down 5-2 and they had to come back and Connor had to take over in the third. But I don't see the Kings playing like that again. You know, like, I don't see them allowing it to open up like that again. I don't see that happening. I don't know that they jump out to a 4-0 lead either, so there is that part of it as well. But I think they've been one of the tighter teams all year. They've been so defensively sound, so good in front of their goaltender, so good at home. I think this is a missed opportunity that they didn't get this game to overtime and win it to overtime. I think this is, they're going to regret that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I mean, it goes off of an unbelievable goaltender performance, which would fall into the same category when you have a goaltender that makes, you know, 50 saves and you end up losing the game. It's like, man, we had something going really good there. I think Drew Doughty kind of nailed it for me post-game. And I feel like Drew's so good at it. Maybe stirring the pot. I don't know if that's what he was going for, but I like the fact where we're kind of talking about it on the network. Would there be some concern here if you're the LA Kings when you're sitting there? I mean, this should be no surprise. Like I said, they've seen this team and these superstars, but like, you have everything under control and then all of a sudden you don't, and you almost lose the game. Like, and Drew Doughty kind of was like, we are the better team. We're a better team. We're a far superior team, paraphrasing here, but far superior team for the 40 minutes. Like, we're good. And, but yeah, it's a missed opportunity, but I think that's the way the LA Kings have to look at that. I mean, they have to look at it as you're always going to run that risk of having those moments, and he's going to have some moments, and Leon's going to have his moment at some point here, and you're going to have to kind of take it on the chin and be ready to push back. But yeah, I mean, I guess the one area where I was looking at that overtime, the overtime winner, and there's obviously a fluky goal, but I think at some point here, and I'm not trying to put blame, but Evan Bouchard is going to have to defend. He's going to have to, he's going to have to find another level to his game, and he will be measured and has been measured up to this point with offensive production. But if you want to win, he's going to have to do a little bit more. And that's a guy where we could talk about stepping up when guys are down. Matthias Ekholm out. Evan Bouchard's going to have to, like, he let Warren Fogel, he didn't breathe on him going to the net. That goal probably doesn't happen. It's a fan shot by Phil Deneau, and that puck does not go in if you get a little piece. Just raise the jersey of Warren Fogel going to the net, and he didn't do it. So that's a guy that I think has to step up. He has to defend if this team wants a chance.
Well, Rupper, I'm not stepping in front of Warren Fogel.
You breathe on him, though. Just breathe on him.
That's why I don't play in the NHL. You talk about missed opportunities, and you've been through some real wars when you played in series. The Devils especially went through a lot of those. Do the Blues have a chance? Do they walk away from two games in Winnipeg? And everybody says, oh, they're two really close games. They were at home. A series doesn't start till you lose at home. They could have won either one of those games, and they needed to win one in Winnipeg to have a chance. Like, how hard is that? I know everybody puts the brave face on and whistles by the graveyard and says, oh, well, you know, you're not in trouble until you lose at home. You're down 2-0 and you haven't been able to score.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you're always going to hear, and we know we've been all around the game for a long time. You're always going to say the right thing. And no matter what, when you're inside that locker room, you're going to, look at the glass half full. You have to. You have to have positive vibes around your team so you can sit there and say, hey, we're not supposed to win those games. We're supposed to win the home games. Then we're, I mean, then it, heaven forbid you drop the third game and then it's like, well, all we could do is control one game at a time. Yeah. You know, you're always trying to keep it positive. And I mean, they've played well. It could have gone either way. I think you're sitting there. I don't think the St. Louis Blues needed confidence builder to be like, we can play with the President's Trophy winners. Like, I think they knew that they could. Yeah, I mean, it's I picked them actually to win the series. Not looking great right now. And that's not anything to do with the with Winnipeg, maybe thinking they're struggling. I just think the St. Louis was playing a certain brand of hockey and they would be a difficult out and Jordan Binnington and all that good stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's a tough spot to be in. I think the way that the games have been played, though, they've stood in there. It can go. I actually don't even think, though, I know goals aren't coming at it in a bunch, or at least the last game. I don't think Connor Hellebuck has been lights out yet. You know, and he hasn't been Vezina caliber. So I guess you got that going for you. You got to say that inside that room. Like, hey, we're down 0-2, but we've gotten to the guy. We've got to keep finding ways to get there. Like, he still hasn't looked completely lights out. And that was the big question mark coming into the series. So, yeah, I don't think they're dead. You know, talk to me after the next game. But this is a fighting group. They're fighters, and I think they'll battle back. They'll win at least a couple games to make this interesting.
All right, I wanted to take it to the East. I wanted to look at Toronto and Ottawa, and specifically Max Domi's goal, right?
Yeah.
So Ottawa has some fight. They come back. Gaudette scores. And then Max Domi, correct me if I'm wrong, Repper. Max Domi shouldn't have it that easy.
No,
to get to the middle of the ice,
yeah.
Right? So what did you see there? And is that, we talk about it all the time, and I don't want to pin this all on Batherson, but I mean, he's got to take a body. He's got to do something, right? Is that the sign of a team in Ottawa that's new to this, that's pretty much new to this, mm-hmm. and has to then understand that play right there is the difference between regular season hockey and playoff hockey?
So in the play, yes. And the playoffs are, it's about physicality. And we always see whether you're a player that does that all the time, you need to find another level of it. But even if you don't do that, if you don't hit in the regular season, you have to get in the way. And I think that's a big thing. And maybe it's a misconception as well. Like, Connor McDavid does not have to go and run guys in the playoffs. I wouldn't want him to.
Right.
But he's got to get in the way a little bit more. You know what I mean? Like, or guys, it doesn't matter what caliber of player you are. You have to get in the way. You have to slow guys down. And when I say get in the way, like, you legitimately could just go and stand in front of somebody. Even if he has to run you over, it messes him up. And when you have the puck, obviously that's going to mess you up as well. I almost categorize it. And you're right. I think it's inexperience. And the way that overtime goal happened against Montreal, like, on that play, there's a lot of different things that go wrong. And I'll bring it back to the Batherson moment here too. Yeah. But like, Patrick Laine in that situation, he simply doesn't have, he's not that type of player, but he needs to be in the postseason. When you're in a situation like that, you have to get in the way. He comes and just kind of swipes at Ovi. And you can't swipe. You can't, like, the easiest thing, if you pretend there's no puck there and you just go at his logo and just stand in his way, that probably doesn't happen. I would say the same thing in that play last night. I mean, Batherson, he could have sent Max. I mean, I'm not asking for that. That would have been amazing. But just stand there. And I don't know what it is in some situations where it's like you get mesmerized in those situations. You don't want to, it's almost like you don't want to fully commit, because if it goes wrong, you might feel like you're screwed, where if I can go fish for the puck, I'm still free. I'm not getting tied up. But it's not just go in there. And I feel like when you go in there and you stand in the way and people know that you're going to make contact, it's easier to read off you as well. But yeah, I mean, that was a tough one. Cause I like Drake Batherson a lot. That's one where it was just way too easy. I think you said it perfectly. Max Domi, give him credit, but you can't get into the middle of the ice that easy, and they allowed it to happen.
Rupper, I need to ask you this. I watched you for a long time make hay around the goaltender. You're always in the kitchen, rattling the pots and pans. You ever been treated like Ridley Greig?
No, I don't think so. Man, I mean, it's he gets a lot of attention there. That was pretty nuts watching the way that kind of went down with Stolarz, and he just has that ability. I mean, a lot of people, you know, on the broadcast, you're going to go back to the empty net slap shot. Like, there's more than that. Like that's just he's in your kitchen every night. Like he is a nuisance to play against, and that's to me is where this team has some advantage, but you got to be smart. And I don't think they were smart in game one with it. And their penalty kill isn't great. You want to kind of push the envelope with physicality, getting under the skin of the opponent, but you don't have some other things maybe going for you. But really, Greig, man, I don't know what it is about him. You know, a funny story with that. When I played with Nino Niederreiter in Minnesota, and I wasn't overly familiar with him. I knew he was a high pick with the Islanders. He came over. I think that was the Cal Clutterbuck trade, if I'm not mistaken. And so he comes in there and it's super nice guy, soft spoken. I'm sure you guys have spoken to him. On the ice, I have like guys coming up to me, and I was a veteran at the time. They're like, Rupper, who is this Nino guy? Like, whatever. Yeah. I can't probably repeat what they said, but every game. And I'm like, Nino, like, he's not really overly doing anything. And I go, I'm like, what are you doing out there, man? And I started like watching him closely. He just gets in your way. He's annoying. You go off the ice for a line change, you're gassed, you're tired, you're bent over and hunched over trying to grab some air. And he just kind of stands there, and you got to go around him, and you're bumping him, and you drop your stick, or he's just, I think Ridley Greig does that, but probably does it a little more intentionally. But he can influence a game. And I mean, that attention he got around the net was crazy. And I think you keep doing it. I think you got to keep getting in there. And I think now from the highlights and everything we've seen from that game, maybe you hope that there's a call if Stolarz is kind of giving you some shots like that. But I mean, that to me is playoff hockey. You got to make life miserable for a goaltender.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want to harp on just this one series, but I mean, it's Toronto, it's the Battle of Ontario. We tend to overanalyze when it comes to the Leafs, right? And I think we also might tend to move the goalposts a little bit on them too, right? So they're up 2-0 in this series. And now I think a question that's out there is, well, are they different? Are they proving it? Or are the Senators just not putting up enough of a fight, showing a little bit of their inexperience and whatnot? Is it a combination of the two? What have you seen from the Leafs? I mean, I see guys like Tanev and OEL making a difference, using their playoff experience, making a difference, things that they haven't really had as much of in the past. What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I don't think that they're fully in a rhythm yet. And a lot of times, really, no team is in round one. That's why you always play the what if game. What if we got past round one? Like you kind of get in this mode of, it just becomes automatic. And that's what we've always kind of wondered, I think, about this Leafs team, if they were able to get that ball rolling in that direction. They look different to me. I will say, I'm kind of surprised how much of game that the Ottawa's kind of controlling in some areas. Like mm-hmm. they go through some really good stretches. I think their inexperience is coming through. But you know, that doesn't mean that Toronto hasn't earned it. I mean, Toronto, yeah. I mean, they defend. They've got a goaltender who is he's outplaying the other. And I don't know how many people maybe saw that. I know that Stolarz's numbers were incredible, especially earlier in the year before he got hurt. But they've got solid goaltending. I mean, they're defending in front of them. It's not perfect right now, but, I mean, you're still waiting. Like, you have moments. When Mitch had the big moment, you know, you're going to have an Austin – game, you're going to have a Willie game. John Tavares might be the hottest goal scorer in hockey. I mean, they're fine. They've been okay. They seem a little bit different, but I don't think they're fully rolling. And that to me is a little bit scary if you're Ottawa, and because of kind of where things are at right now.
So you spoke about experience. There's no more experienced teams than the two teams in Florida. Stanley Cup final the last 5 years. They play game one. Matthew Tkachuk comes back, gets two goals, right out of Hollywood. But you're writing that story. There's no way you write that's a 6-2 game.
No, never would have thought that. And I go back to we saw that crazy number, and I'm sure you guys saw it too. With Vasi's numbers in game one of series is not good, and that hasn't been great. But one thing we always know about him, and that was dating back to their back-to-back cup or their three finals appearances in a row. What was it? He had some crazy number after a loss. Just come out lights out, I should say, the next game. I would expect that. I didn't see this happening. But then again, like this Florida Panthers team, they're different. We know they're different. I just thought you still got Ekblad out. We didn't know what we were going to see from Tkachuk. Two goals. I mean, it's I think that first Bennett goal was huge in the way it was. Sam Bennett coming in here, smacking that thing out of the air, just get the ball rolling at home in the right direction. I still think this is going to be a long series. I picked Tampa go to the finals. I think whoever wins the series goes to the finals. I think this Stanley Cup final, this would be the sixth year in a row, right? And that it would run through the state of Florida, the finals. I just think Vasi's going to have something to say, and this team's going to have something to say in game two. I did not expect that type of, blowout in game one.
Quickly, but I did want to ask you about Lou Lamoriello too, but we get to stick on the playoffs quick. We haven't touched on what might be the best series in Colorado Dallas, right? I mean, so it's 1-1. Colin Blackwell gets his moment. It happens all the time, right? You guys get their moment, and they find a way, and they get their moment. Like Alex Ovechkin hadn't had an overtime goal until he finally scored one. Colin Blackwell gets one in game two for Dallas. What do you make of this series right now? And it's kind of hard, right? I mean, like, are we going to see Landeskog? Are we going to see Heiskanen, right? I mean, is it still pretty hard to handicap where this is at?
I mean, I just thought that coming into this series and the way Dallas was playing down the stretch, without Heiskanen, the uncertainty of him, without Robertson, I just thought that this went from the series to watch to all of a sudden now I'm like, I just have a feeling Colorado's going to have their way. And then game two, there was that pushback. And I think until we know more, is Miro going to be back? How does this kind of stack up? I mean, having Sagan contribute is big. I think there's two players on Dallas that I'm really intrigued with. And one scored a big goal in that game in Dadonov, and the other one's Mikael Granlund. I think those two guys can be the sleeper depth players for Dallas. If this is going to go in their favor, you're going to need like some of those types of performances. I played with Granny in Minnesota, super bright player. We've seen him. He's bounced around quite a bit, but man, he can make some things happen. And Dadonov's goal was awesome. Just getting in the blue paint, just kind of, Dan Bylsma used to always say spear the goalie. That didn't necessarily mean like spear. It just means like digging for the puck. So getting in there, spearing the goalie and, kind of creating some ugly chances, an ugly goal. I can't imagine Colorado losing this series. But, you know, Dallas is how about that? The one thing that jumped out to me, though, it's in that game, too, is the Nathan MacKinnon hit on Jamie Benn. And Jamie Benn was a beast in the game, throwing bodies around. The only reason I want to throw this in is because we always talk about how MacKinnon's just different. And I probably wouldn't say he's the best player in the world. I still think that's Connor McDavid. But this is what's different. That is right there what's different. I just think about it from if I'm on the bench and their captain, their guy, I mean, toe for toe, probably the toughest, most grizzled guy in the playoffs is Jamie Benn, right? Like he gets mean in those moments. I could see him just taking over in the physicality department. Nathan MacKinnon just goes and blows him up with a hit. Like what that does for you on the bench, right? That's what's different. I mean, not taking anything away from Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid, and you can go up and down the line, Nikita Kucherov. None of those guys can go and run through your biggest boy and knock him down like that. I thought that was pretty impressive, but I hope it goes a long way. But I have a feeling Colorado's they get back home in Denver. It's gonna be an uphill battle for Dallas.
Last one before we let you go, and Dan brought it up, is Lou Lamoriello, the Islanders, 82 years old. Who knows if he has another chance? You would think not. He was an integral person in your career. I'm wondering if you can put into perspective what his legacy is and what he meant to you.
Yeah, I mean, he, I guess the best way he meant a lot to me. I mean, give me my opportunity. I mean, without Lou Lamoriello, there's no guarantee I play in the NHL. So, and the way he kind of taught me about it too, and brought me in, and I was a guy that was, went back in the draft and kind of had to start over from anew. And then long story cut short is I had health issues and a couple years in the league and couldn't get a job anywhere else. And he picked me up for a second time to come back to New Jersey and gave me another opportunity. I owe Lou a lot. The one thing I will say though, it's really interesting when you talk to guys who played under Lou Lamoriello, especially in those Devils days, is the amount of respect that, I mean, to be completely frank, the amount of respect that I got that I probably didn't deserve is because I played for Lou. You know what I mean? Like I remember this conversation vividly, getting traded. I played my rookie year. We won the cup. I played like 26 regular season games. The next year, played about half the season, got traded at the time to Phoenix Coyotes. Mike Barnett was the GM of the Coyotes at the time. And Barney came up to me in the weight room in Arizona, and he starts asking me questions about, I mean, not just questions about what I thought and as far as the team goes. And I mean, we're talking like identity, team identity. How do we build this? The culture, these things. I'm like, I've played 60 games in the league. I'm trying to survive. You're asking me about, and I respect the heck out of him for asking us, but it was because I played for Lou. And he knew that certain things were being instilled. And I came up in the organization. And from that day forward, started paying attention to it. And it's just Lou, he had this ability to make you believe, make you come together as a team. You didn't love it all the time. I didn't love it. I grow a beard now because I couldn't for so many years. But you buy in and you feel something under Lou Lamoriello that you don't feel anywhere else. And I think a lot of places have tried to replicate it over the years. I think to me, that's the biggest compliment is everybody will vocally be able to tell you everything they think about Lou and that what they believe in him and talking Hall of Famer and all that good stuff. But when you're trying to emulate Lou Lamoriello, that's where you know he was something special.
Yeah, great stuff, Rupper. I mean, you got great perspective on that, and obviously he's a legend in the game, and you're a legend on this podcast, so we really appreciate it, man. So,
hey,
thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the playoffs. We'll catch up again soon.
All right? We'll catch up. Enjoy, guys.
Obviously, great stuff on the playoffs there from Mike Rupp. We covered a ton there, Sean, and we also covered, obviously, Minnesota, Vegas, and Carolina, New Jersey, those series at the top. But we asked him about Lou Lamoriello. He talked about it from personal experience. A great story there with Mike Barnett as well when he was the GM in Phoenix for the Coyotes. But Lou's now out. And did it surprise you? It did not surprise me. I look at it and I said this team looked like it was not going anywhere. The Islanders I'm talking about. They don't have a young core right now that you want to build on. Their older guys have not gotten better. The guys that they've signed to long-term contracts have not gotten better. And it, to me, just seemed like time for a change. That's not a knock on Lou Lamoriello and what he's done. He made the Islanders. The Islanders were relevant every year under Lou Lamoriello. But you look at it. I wasn't surprised. What about you?
No, I don't think you're ever surprised, right? Like, very much like coaches, managers are hired to be fired. You know, as soon as you take over a position, the clock starts ticking. And look, I think the Islanders need a long-term plan to execute. And so they need fresh ideas and they need people in those positions. And I don't think that was going to happen with Lou. Like you look at Seattle, right? And Ron Francis moves up and Jason Botterill comes in and he becomes the GM. And you know, that's going to be a very collaborative thing. They've worked together for a long time. You know, I think as you're the Islanders and you try and bring in fresh voices, I think most people in the NHL are going to be like, well, Lou's going to have the last word. And rightfully so. The man's in the Hall of Fame. He's won cups. He's rebuilt multiple franchises. I think people forget the work that he did in Toronto before he left there. I'm not surprised. I think it's a sad way for an unbelievable career to end, but it's not sad. It's something else. Like, you would have liked to have seen him go out on a better note, and lose fiercely proud. And, you know, I'm sure he would like to. And you know, he's 82 years old. And, you know, I said to Rupper, I don't know if this is the end, right? He loves the game so much, and he has so much to give. And he's just a font of knowledge. I mean, both you and I grew up covering the NHL with Lou as the manager of the team we covered. You know, I started covering the Devils in 94, and Lou was the manager, and there was some familiarity there because we're both Rhode Island guys. You know, I'd gone to a lot of Providence College games, went to camp that he ran, all of those things. But I didn't know the man. But I learned so much from him and Jacques Lemaire those first few years about how to cover the NHL, how to do things, the respect and the integrity that you needed to be successful at this job. And you know, personally, I'm forever grateful. You know, Rupp said it, like, he wouldn't be where he is. And I don't know that I would be where I am if some of the lessons I learned very early on as a Cub reporter and honestly in a beat I didn't belong in, with the experience I had, you know, with the patience that Lou showed me and the things that I learned just by watching him manage a team. I don't know that I would have the career that I had. It's not the same as Rupp, who was hired by him and put in positions to succeed. But I think you run across people in your life where you look at them and the way that they do their business, and you're like, I'd like to emulate that in my business.
You're right. And I don't think Lou's done. I don't know that he's a general manager again, but I think any team would be smart to bring him on as an advisor, especially a team with a younger GM, right? Now, that team, that GM has to have full confidence in himself, because it could be, if Lou doesn't think he's done, it could be looked at as you're hiring the guy who might eventually replace you. But Lou's 82 years old, and he's got a ton of energy. But I think his days as a GM are probably done. This league is growing younger. It's growing younger in the GM's chair as well. The room, the general, ask around the GM meetings. I do it all the time, and I'm told all the time, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, those meetings are different. Now, that room, they're open, they're collaborative, they're into marketing, they're into understanding what sells in the league, how do we sell this league, how do we sell our players, all these things. Lou doesn't do that. You're going to see the New York Islanders go on a marketing bonanza now with whoever their new general manager is. They are going to do whatever it is they can and as much of it as they can, because the roadblocks that Lou put up surrounding the players and surrounding the sanctity of that team are no longer there. And that's what the league is. That's what professional sports is now. You need that. You need to sell it. And as good of a GM as Lou has been, and he's a Hall of Fame GM, and he's every team he's gone to has been either a championship team or a very relevant team, those walls have always been up. They're going to be broken down now, and the Islanders are going to market, and they're going to sell different things, and you're going to see different things coming out of there. And you might even see free agents now wanting to go there. They have a brand new building. It's a great place to live. All these other things, right? But any team would be nuts not to bring Lou on as an advisor. The man's got more hockey knowledge in his right, thumb than most people in this league have in their brain, because he's seen it all and he's done it all. And if you're a younger GM, let's look at Kyle Davidson in Chicago, right? Mike Greer's not a young man, but he's a younger GM in San Jose. You're trying to build. Man, wouldn't you like that resource? Wouldn't you like to have a guy who knows how to build teams and has built winning teams for 4-5 decades? Be pretty nice to have that as just a little bit of a right-hand man, a voice you can lean on. He doesn't have to be there every day, but just, hey, this little piece of advice, wouldn't that? You agree with me, Sean?
I agree 100%. And you know where, if he ends any place, you know where he ends, I think?
Anaheim.
No.
Where? Minnesota. Well, I was thinking because of Pat Verbeek.
Minnesota.
Billy
Guerin.
Yeah.
He's never shy.
And they had Ray Shiro, who unfortunately passed away.
Who passed away. And Billy's never shy about collaborating. He's very confident in himself, but he's very collaborative. Like, you look at the Team USA and the staff he put together, he wasn't intimidated by the other people in the room. He wanted them to provide input. Yeah. He's seen firsthand what Lou's done to build an organization. You know, he went through it with the Devils. He was traded by Lou. You know, he understands all of those things. I think he has an immense amount of respect for him. So to me, that's what would make sense. You know, and it really, for Lou, it's a culture thing, right? He identifies players. It's not analytics. It's the eye test for Lou. He looks at a player and he's like, that's a player. That's not a player. And it has as much to do with intangibles, with character, as it does with skill, right? And taking two players that are equal and understanding that one's a better fit because of their mindset. So I don't know if he ends up anyplace else. Maybe, you know, he rides off into the sunset. But as you were talking, I'm like, my God, if I'm Billy Guerin, I'm making that phone call and saying, Lou, I don't know if you're done, but if you'd like a pretty cushy job where I just call you every once in a while and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, you know, what do you see? I'm your guy.
Yeah. Good call. Very good call there. It's going to be interesting to see where that goes, because I just don't think with his energy that he knows anything else. He wants to be involved and has his hands somewhere. So that's obviously not the only change. We talked about Seattle Kraken. Ron Francis moves up to become president of hockey operations. Jason Botterill, now the GM. They fire Dan Bylsma. They need a new coach. The New York Rangers, not surprisingly, fire Peter Laviolette on Saturday. They need a new coach. Greg Cronin out in Anaheim. Sean, Anaheim's the job I'm targeting. That is a sleeping giant job. That team is younger. It's got younger players and more coming. And they've got veteran guys there who are fully committed. They're all in. We had Alex Killorn on, right? Not that long ago. That guy seemed fully all in on what's going on in Anaheim. And that can't be easy for a two-time Stanley Cup champion to go there and have a rebuild. But he's fully all in. There's a young player there in Leo Carlson who's a budding star. And to me, that is a sleeping giant type of job. If you can get a younger coach into that role, that coach can grow with that team, and you might have a next John Cooper Tampa Bay Lightning situation on your hands. Could it be David Carl? That's the name everybody talks about, right? But if David Carl wants to jump to the NHL, we don't know that yet, right? But if we want to look at it, and a lot of guys want to interview him, I'm eyeing that Anaheim job. Oh, by the way, it's also a pretty nice place to live.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of pressure. Like, it's a rabid hockey market, but it's not.
21-point improvement this year. 21-point improvement.
So here's the thing, Dan. If I'm a coach, especially if I'm David Carl, who is basically a king in Denver.
Yeah, he can basically write his own ticket, too, if he wants to leave.
Yeah, but if I'm him and I look at that team and I say, there's a hockey lifer who wrung 21 points out of that team in his first year, and he's on the unemployment line, what's wrong with that team?
It's a fair question. I think that Greg Cronin was hired for that job to do exactly what he did. To take that team, when everybody knew it was going to be not a good team 2 years ago, to make it a better team, have some players grow. But I never looked at Greg Cronin, and maybe because maybe this is my own fault, I don't know, I never looked at him as the guy who would be the one taking them on the next ride, on the next step. I didn't see that. And maybe that's why he's out. Maybe he's out because he's a very old school way. It's a very old school way, right? Maybe that didn't run very well with the younger players. And it's a younger player. It's a younger man league, Sean. We are dinosaurs, if you think about it that way. We are. It's a younger man's league. And that's why I want to find a coach who's a younger coach who deals with younger players, who can now grow with those players and grow with that team. That's what I'm looking for if I'm Anaheim.
First of all, that wasn't communicated to Greg Cronin.
Well,
he was completely blindsided. Even Pat Verbeek was like, dude, he had no idea this was coming, and he was crushed. Like,
because that might be his opportunity.
Of course. Look, if I drove page views up on our site 20%, and then
the
powers
that be, objective for you?
Yeah, when the powers that be come and say, hey, we're up 20%. Here's your severance. Have a good one. Like, what? And then if you're the next guy coming in, you're like, well, what do I have to do to keep my job? Like, so for like somebody like David Carl, like he looks at like a Dave Haxtell, a Quinn, David Quinn. And he says, I'm going to give all this up. Runs to the national championship, developing players, respect of everybody, big man on campus, and I'm going to give this up for a room that got a coach fired that made a 25% improvement on the year before. Where's my job security?
There is no job security in the National Hockey League, and that's what he has to determine.
But that's
what he has to determine.
That's extreme. Can you think of another coach? Gerard Gallant, maybe. But it wasn't even that big an improvement. Like,
no, they regressed. The Rangers regressed in the second year under Gallant. They went a little bit downhill. They went to the Eastern Conference Final the first year. They lost in seven in the second year. I mean, yeah, I see. Well, I mean, it could be similar to David Quinn. You know, like David Quinn didn't get the best out of the Rangers in his time there, but you know, they were improving, they were getting better. And
do you think that's a consolation prize for David Quinn?
No, it's not, but then he got fired. You know? Like they were an improving team and then he got fired.
Exactly. So where's the attraction in that? And
there
I understand there's only
none.
32 jobs, but all I'm saying is I would have some reservations.
What do you think is the best job opening right now? We don't know about Boston right now. We don't know about Vancouver right now. So let's remove them. But you've got the Rangers, you've got the Blackhawks, you've got the Ducks, and you've got the Kraken. Am I missing one? I don't know. I don't think I'm missing any right now.
No, I think that's right.
I think that's right. What's the best job?
I guess in the end, it's the Anaheim job. I would just have some reservations. Like, I don't think Chicago's close enough to compete. I have the same reservations about the Rangers that I do about Anaheim. Like, look, Peter Laviolette has his flaws, but you did the story. The players basically checked out the way that Barkley Gaudreau was treated and the way that their captain, Jacob Trouba, was treated is causing these players not to give 100%. They don't know their value to the organization. And it wasn't Peter. The players made sure to say it wasn't Peter. They said whether it was good or bad, we knew where we were with Peter Laviolette. He is a good communicator. Players are saying, I don't know my value to this organization, so why am I going to give this organization my value?
We could do a whole podcast on that, and we really are running out of time on this one. And we're not going to do it. Not now. Because we have the playoffs, but we could do a whole podcast on the top-down communication issues going on, top-down, bottom-up communication issues going on with the New York Rangers right now. But we're not going to do that. I think the Chicago job is better than you're giving it credit for, but they're not close. I do think the Anaheim job is the best job, and it, you know, I think that one right there is the sleeping giant job, and I think the New York Islanders general manager job is a sleeping giant job. You can go in there and bring all of your people in and you can completely change the direction and the look of that team. That to me is this is not a knock on Lou Lamoriello, because Lou has his ways and his ways were good for a very long time. But that team, that is a sleeping giant job for anybody who steps into that role, because they will, I would think, be given carte blanche to say, here's my plan. I'm going to execute my plan. It's an ownership group that I don't think meddles very much with the hockey side of it. They want to win. They will. They look like they're willing to spend. They want that team to be relevant every year on a national level. And that's why that job is a sleeping giant job too. Well, all of these changes are happening and they're running parallel to the playoffs. Playoffs take front and center for us. There's a lot that's going to happen here in the next week before we talk to you again on this podcast. Sean, I have no idea where I will be a week from now. I don't even know where you'll be a week from now.
Well, unless something bad happens, dude, I'm going to be here because there's game. I leave today to go to Minnesota for games 3 and 4, which are Thursday and Saturday. And then there's 2 days off. So game 5 would be on Tuesday. So depending on where we do it, either we're looking at a game 6 and another trip to Minnesota, or I'm heading home, or I'm staying here. So I'm going to still be on the road.
All right. You'll still be on the road. I think I will be, but I don't know yet. We'll figure it out. But that is until next time. Thanks for listening. And as always, the NHL At The Ring podcast is brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.